When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Duke fans, it's episode 35 of DBR Bites. Smaller size editions where we typically, these are usually just like, let's preview the team that Duke has coming up. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on them. But for this one, we actually have a little extra thing we want to talk about at the very end. So make sure if you find our conversation about Florida State boring, stick around because there's something, a bonus stuff coming at the end of the episode. In any event, I am Jason Evans. I'm here for your listening pleasure. And joining me, as always, partner in crime, Donald Wine. Donald, how you doing this morning?
Doing all right. It's a little late start for me. Slept in a little bit this morning, but yesterday was a decent day. It was Valentine's Day. I hope you and Mrs. Evans had a nice day. And for me, I just kind of sat here in my heart shirt and watched TV, watched a lot of basketball.
Yes, we had a delightful time. And it is time for us, the Valentine's gift we give to our Duke fans is to talk about the team that Duke has coming up. The Blue Devils, after three games at home, now embark on a three-game road trip, and it's a pretty important this is a big deal, Donald.
Yeah, but before we get started, I failed to mention, because we haven't had an episode since then, February 13th, as we know, is the birthday of Coach K, so
yes.
Happy belated birthday to the GOAT.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for throwing that in there. Yes. I can't believe I forgot. You're right. Easy to remember his birthday. It's the day right before Valentine's Day.
Right, in any event, Valentine's Day.
Like I said. Okay. All right. So now we're going to get to the three games that Duke has coming up. A very important stretch of the schedule, because any road win is a good road win. And these are three teams that are, you know, I'd say right smack in the middle to the upper middle of the standings. This is not going to be an easy stretch. Florida State, Miami, and Wake Forest. We will take them one at a time in terms of how you and I do our previews. So today is all about Florida State, the Seminoles. Donald, I know you've looked at their record, which, you know, sort of an interesting roller coaster of a season for them. Didn't look too good, very down, then suddenly started surging. At one point, they were 5-1 in the ACC. I mean, they were at the top of the standings. Since going 5-1 in the ACC, things have not gone too great for them, has it?
Yeah, so let's start from the beginning. They're 13-11. They're 7-6. In the ACC, as you mentioned, they're right in the middle. They're focused on eighth, but they're really tied for fifth. They're logjam with three other teams right in the middle of the pack. 85th in KenPom as of this morning, 95th in net. And Jason, I think the thing about Florida State is that they've played a really tough schedule. KenPom has it at the 31st strongest schedule in the country. They started out, as you mentioned, very up and down. They were 6-6, but they did end up with a couple of major wins. They played UNLV in Colorado at the Sunshine Slam in Daytona. They won both of those games, Colorado's game coming in overtime. Then they come back and they immediately lose four straight, and they had to struggle to get to 6-6 before the new year. Bad losses in that time frame. They lost to South Florida. They lost on December 30th to Lipscomb. Now, Jason, I think the thing that you were mentioning is they started January, the calendar turned 2024, and they started January hot. They won five conference games in a row, including over Wake and on the road to rivals Miami. But since January 17th, they have very much cooled off. They are 2-5 since then, including a 9-point loss to Louisville, where they allowed the Cardinals to score 101 points.
Ouch.
That's a lot of points. They've lost two straight thus far to Virginia at home, and then away on Tuesday to Virginia Tech. They've lost their last three home games. They're 7-6 at home this season. But Jason, against Duke, we know this is a place that we traditionally don't play well. The last time we were in Tallahassee, January 2022, Duke lost by one in overtime. Now, Jason, keep that in your brain for just a second. Duke is only 4-3 in their last seven games at the Tucker Civic Center. So again, this is a game. This is a game where you mentioned this team may be reeling kind of in the middle of the pack, but this is no slouch of a road game. Now, Jason, I told you before we started that I have a wild stat. This is the wild stat about Florida State. Do not let this game get to overtime. Florida State has won an NCAA record 14 straight games that have gone to overtime. Their last overtime loss was December 2nd, 2015 against Iowa. As I mentioned, this year they already have an overtime win. I mentioned the last time we were in Tallahassee, it was an overtime loss for Duke. We lost by one. So yeah, it sounds like you're going to get to the metrics, and their metrics are kind of wild, but one stat is clear. Don't let this game get to overtime, because if it does, Florida State's chances of winning seems to go up exponentially.
I'm sorry, that's incredible. You said that they haven't lost an overtime game since 2015.
But it's not like, yeah, of course, it's not like every game is going to overtime, right?
They may have still
won to a game. But yes, 14 straight games that have gone to overtime won by Florida State.
That's pretty impressive. All right, so let's get to the advanced metrics. They are Florida State. The Seminoles are number 85 in KenPom. They are 114th on offense and 59th on defense. So you know which end of the floor it gets their focus. This is a team that plays fast, by the way. You mentioned, you know, that Louisville game where Louisville got to 101 points. It is not uncommon for a Florida State game for both teams to get into the upper 70s or the 80s. They play with the 31st fastest tempo in all of college basketball. Let's start with the offense. It's very simple to say they are the Florida State Seminoles are a bad shooting team. They only hit 32% of their threes, just 69% of their free throws. We talk about it. You want to be able to hit a decent percentage of free throws. Only getting 69% is a problem for any team. It's going to hurt your offensive efficiency when you don't convert from the charity stripe. They only have one guy on the team who's hitting better than 33% of his three-pointers. I mean, that's just a problem. And by the way, they don't shoot a lot of threes. They're like bottom 50 in the land in terms of frequency of three-pointers taken. So this is not a Florida State team that tries to get to you from the outside. Look, they don't give up many steals, but they're one of these teams that sort of make their own problems with like offensive fouls, throwing the ball out of bounds, traveling, sloppy stuff like that in terms of turnovers. And one small note, it's really hard. This is just a weird, freaky thing about them. It's really hard to block their shot. Florida State, top 10 in the country in terms of having one of the lowest block percentages on offense. Let's convert to the other end of the floor, Donald. On defense, the hallmark of this Florida State team is turning teams over. They have a top 20 steal percentage in the country. They force turnovers on more than 20% of opponents' possessions. Duke, they've got to force Duke to make like at least 12 or more turnovers if Florida State's going to have a real chance in this contest. And they've got to have those turnovers be like live ball turnovers that become easy buckets at the other end for Florida State. Because this Florida State team is not that great at defending the three-point line. And the thing that really jumps out from them, Donald, this team fouls a ton. It's incredible. Yep. They're like one of the 30 worst teams in all of college basketball in terms of the number of free throws they give up. They will put you on the line. They have allowed almost as many free throws as field goal attempts against them. That's like an insane stat. So that should be a major part of Duke's attack. We've talked, Duke fans know, this is a Duke team that has been on a roller coaster of free throws, where some halves we get zero and some halves we're shooting like 15 plus free throws. I hope, if Duke is successful in this game, we're going to be at the free throw line a lot. One last statistical note about their offense and defense, their rebounding. They're poor at both ends of the floor at rebounding. They're barely in the top 200 in the country at offensive rebounds, and they're almost 300th in the country at defensive rebounds. Hit the boards, Duke. We need to see everybody on the team going to the glass.
Jason, there's a couple of stats out there that stuck out to me that you mentioned. First off, their tempo. You mentioned how quick their tempo is, but I want to give some clarity as to how fast they play sometimes. Florida State this year, 15 games this year, they have had over 70 possessions. In three games, they've had over 80 possessions. That's a lot of possessions.
That is a ton, yeah.
Meanwhile, compare that with Duke. Duke only has six games this season where they've had over 70 possessions, and they haven't had any games where they've had over 80. Now, the lowest game for Florida State, the fewest possessions that they've had in one game, was 63. That was the number. Of course, that was against UVA, which is a team that likes to slow it down.
Right.
Now, you also mentioned the fact that they don't get blocked a lot on offense and they send guys to the line. Now, in the fact that they don't rebound well. Jason, here's why that's interesting. Florida State is the tallest team in the country, according to Bob. That is the reason why they don't get blocked a lot on offense. One of the reasons, and the anomaly is that they don't rebound well. But also, Jason, the one reason that they try to send you to the free throw line a lot is because they try to block your shot a lot. Why? Because they have a lot of tall trees. And as we get into the players, I know we'll talk about it in a second. Because they're throwing so many people at you, they almost have like a couple guys that are like, we don't care. We have five fouls. Use them. Just try to go for the hero play. And that's where they struggle a lot, is where guys like to go for the hero play, and it ends up being, again, a sloppy moment on offense where they throw the ball away or travel or maybe have an offensive foul. And on defense, they will try to block you. And when they miss, they will send you to the free throw line because they have fouled you.
So the thing about their size that is really interesting, as you said, they are the tallest team in the country. But it's actually not. Look, we saw a Florida State team a few years ago that had like 4 7-footers on the roster.
Yep. And they started three of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This is not that kind of a Florida State team. The reason this team is really tall is not because of a bunch of 7-footers who are on the floor at the same time. It's because they don't have anyone who is small. They have a kid named Primo Spears, 6'3", who, by the way, has been injured a lot this year, has not played a ton. He's the only guy on the roster, literally the only guy on the roster under 6'5". So what they do is they run wave after wave of like 6'7", 6'9", 6'10" dudes at you. And as you mentioned, you know, the ham man will use his bench extensively. And that's why they are such a tall team. It's not so much because they've got a bunch of 7-footers. It's that like everybody is between 6'7" and 6'10". By the way, we talk about Ham and the bench. Against Virginia Tech this week, they played 11 guys, 7 or more minutes. Against UVA over the weekend, they played 12 guys. And it was a close game. It wasn't like it was a blowout. It wasn't like they were clearing off the bench. Like 11, 12 guys routinely see regular minutes for this Florida State team. It's the way Leonard Hamilton likes to do things. It's very interesting. I don't know. I'm not sure how he keeps everybody happy in that way. I'm not sure it's the most efficient way of playing your team, because I would think that your player number one is better than player number 12, and yet they're both getting significant minutes. It's sort of strange.
Jason, 12 players average 10 plus minutes a game. That's an incredible stat, because as you mentioned, there's only 200 minutes to divide up between these guys. And so there's a lot of guys who are coming in and out. But again, that's not, as you mentioned, Leonard Hamilton does this. I guess what keeps them happy is, hey, I'm recruiting you. Yes, you're going to be the number 17th guy on the bench, but you know what? You're getting in this ball game every single time because I play everybody, and everyone keeps fresh. And I think, Jason, that lends to the fact that, again, we talk about how they send guys to the free throw line quite a bit. For guys in the first half with two fouls, their participation is 8.4% of total minutes. Because what that means is, if you're getting two fouls, you're coming out of the game because they're just going to throw another wave of guys at you. So Leonard Hamilton is a guy that's like, again, I think sometimes it feels like they play very, very sloppily on purpose. It's almost like, hey, you go in the game, you have five fouls, use two of them real quick, establish a tone, and then we're going to bring you out of the game and bring in someone else who's going to do the same thing. And it sometimes that lends to what feels like a very helter-skelter type of play, and of course a frenetic tempo, going back and forth, trying to get as many possessions as possible, because in their minds, the more possessions you have, the more, you know, bites at the apple you can get. I think when it comes to Florida State, is Duke has to remain calm in this. Again, UVA was able to hold them to 63 possessions. We're probably going to be closer to 70, which is, you know, again, trending towards our higher range. But what that means is we just have to be clinical and methodical and very calm and poised when we do, because the fans are going to get into it. The players are going to want us to turn us into a track meet, and we just have to play our game.
Yeah. And speaking of play the game, let's talk a little bit about the players. First of all, by the way, it's worth noting that Ken Pomeroy projects that Duke will win this game 78-72. I feel like, you know, we've sort of, I don't want to say we've been talking down, but we haven't been saying sort of impressive things about Florida State so far. Road games are difficult. Pomeroy says 6-point win for Duke. I mean, like, folks should not be surprised when this is a tight contest, a very competitive game, well into the second half. I won't be shocked if that's what happens, because it is so difficult to play on the road, and because, you know, Florida State is a decent club, especially on defense. Let's talk a little about the players. Donald, is there anybody you want to specifically highlight?
Yeah, I think the first guy you kind of want to throw out there is Jameer Watkins. He's the 6'7 transfer junior from VCU. He leads them at 14.5 points per game. He averages 5.8 rebounds a game. And again, when we look at some of these stats, Jason, there's only a couple of guys that are in double figures. There's only a couple of guys that average more than like 3 rebounds a game, because again, they're sending wave after wave after wave of players. So a lot of these stats may be skewed, but Jameer Watkins is the guy that usually has the ball in his hands the most when he's in the game. He also can distribute. He averages close to 3 assists a game, and on defense, he averages close to 2 steals a game. So he's their motor. He's the guy that's, as goes Jameer Watkins, usually so goes Florida State. And the idea is to key him up. Again, this might be a game where you put Jalen Blakes on him for a little bit, but at the very least, you're putting a Tyrese Proctor on him on defense to kind of slow him down, because then he can't pass it to some of the other guys like Darren Green, who I know you're going to mention. He's the one guy that averages more than 30 minutes a game, and he's the one guy who can shoot a decent 3-point shot. So those are the guys I'm looking at as the two motor guys. But Jameer Watkins, the ball more likely than not is going to end up in his hands at one point during each possession that he's on the floor.
Yeah, you picked out the guy that I wanted to highlight, and it is Darren Green, who is now a fifth-year senior. He's one of those guys who's been at been in college basketball forever and a day. He actually originally started at Central Florida playing for Johnny Dawkins, and is now at Florida State. He came there last year and was a significant player for them a year ago. I mentioned this weird anomaly that they're a team who only shoots 32% from 3-point range, and yet they only have one guy who basically averages better than that from three. And it's like, how do they achieve that? Well, it's because Darren Green is the guy who takes most of their 3-pointers, and he hits them at a 38% clip. He takes like more than half the threes for this team, and it's real important. I'm not sure who Duke will necessarily match up on him. I could see it being Tyrese Proctor. I could also see it being Jared McCain. But we're going to have to pay attention to him. If Florida State is going to have a real chance in this game, it'll probably be that Darren Green has an outstanding game from 3-point range. The other thing that's sort of interesting to me, I was looking down their roster, and I mean, there's some slightly familiar names. I'm like, oh yeah, I think I remember Baba Miller and Cameron Fletcher, who's, by the way, been hurt most of the year. But for the most part, I was looking at this roster, I'm like, I just don't know a lot of these guys. You mentioned Jameer Watkins is a transfer. One of their other top scorers, Primo Spears, is a transfer. I don't want to say that they completely remade the roster over the transfer portal and stuff like that, but it is a roster full of a lot of names and faces that I'm not intimately familiar with like I am with most other teams in the ACC. It's just the nature of how it's done in college basketball nowadays.
Well, if you mentioned Cameron Fletcher. Cameron Fletcher has been at Florida State for a couple of years, but he did transfer there from Kentucky. So he's one of those heralded recruits that, you know, went to Kentucky and all of a sudden was like, I need to find a change of scenery, and ended up down in Tallahassee. But yeah, Jason,
he's been hurt though. Cameron Fletcher's
he's
not
been hurt. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think. Yeah. But when he's in the game again, he's going to try and go after you on the boards. He's 6'7". He's not like a huge, huge dude, but he's going to muscle his way in there. He gets 5 rebounds a game. So again, he's going to be one of those guys we need to put a body on if he does check into the game, if he ends up playing significant minutes. Baba Miller is probably their tallest guy, and he's the guy that's going to try and go after the boards. But again, that's maybe a job for Kyle Filipowski. I wonder if when you talk about a guy like Cam Cohen, another 6'10 dude that they're going to throw in, if they do start throwing in some of their trees together, which one Mark Mitchell is put on, or if they bring in a Sean Stewart or a Ryan Young to kind of, you know, complement the trees if they do put those trees in there. But as you mentioned, a lot of these guys are 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", guys that are, you know, they can go out on the wing, they can go in the post. And they're just going to go at a really rapid pace because they know that when they get tired, there's a new wave that's going to of players that are going to come in to replace them. So for us, we have to play within ourselves, slow the game down as much as we can. I know we're not going to get it down into the 60s, but if we can get it closer to 70 as opposed to 80, I think we control that game then at this point. And that, and then I think when Florida State has these games that are have smaller number of possessions, they panic a little bit more and they take bad shots because they want to try and lengthen the game by having more possessions. And that's where if we play our tempo and play within control, we will be right there at the end. And I think, Jason, the one thing that always, always, always cripples us when we go down to Tallahassee, take care of the damn basketball. Every single time we go down there, it feels like we have like 15, 16 turnovers. If we are in the single digits as far as turnovers are going, this is going to be a good night for Duke. And we're going to, you know, I think shooting wise, if we struggle through shooting, we're going to have the opportunities at the free throw line. We're going to have the opportunities in the paint to really put Florida State away.
You know, by the way, you mentioned Baba Miller, who is their starting big man. I think that's a really interesting matchup, him and Kyle Filipowski, because Baba Miller is sort of perhaps the thing he does best of anything on the basketball floor is block shots. Now, I'm not saying he's like elite, like, you know, top 20 shot blocker in all of college basketball, but he's not super far behind that. And you know, we've seen Flip struggle at time with guys who are shot blockers. The other thing about Baba Miller is like, he's as likely to take a 3-pointer as he is to take a 2-pointer, even though he's a big fella. And you would think he would operate close to the basket. He's actually a guy who likes to drift out to the perimeter. Like if you forget about him, if Flip is helping, you know, on a screen, and they don't really screen and roll with Baba Miller. They pick and pop, and he steps out. Mm-hmm. And if you're not there on him, he will pull up and take a three on you. Now he doesn't hit him at a huge percentage, but you know, 32%. He's not terrible from out there, and he, like I say, he's unafraid to take that shot. So that's a really interesting matchup, I think.
Contested shots. That's the key here. When a team is terrible from 3-point land, the last thing you want to do is give them open chances to try and up that number. So just put a hand in their face. I think when you do the pick and pop, you're going to have maybe Kyle Filipowski hedge for maybe a step and then get back to his man so that he can contest any three that is shot. But especially for Darren Green, put a hand in his face. Like you mentioned, he's a decent 3-point shooter. He shoots 38%, but he's going to take a lot of them. He's the guy that has the volume from three. So if you put a hand in his face, make it more difficult for him. If they start missing them, they're going to abandon the three. As you mentioned, they don't take a lot of threes because they're not making them. So if you get them out early, then again, you can concentrate in the paint, and that's where the defense and Zion can thrive.
Yeah, okay. I think we're all done with Florida State. By the way, you know, it's entirely possible there'll be someone that we didn't think of at all, who will be a significant player in this game because they play so many different guys. You just don't know who's
going to step up. Tom House. I'm going with Tom House. He's 6'7". He's the last guy off the bench of the 12. So Tom House, if he goes off, just we talked about him for 2 seconds.
There you go. Good way to cover your bases, my friend. All right, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, won't be long, but we do want to talk about a Blue Devil, formerly in the NBA, now talking about the NBA. That story when we come back. This episode of the Duke Basketball Roundup is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Springtime is the season that's supposed to feel like a new beginning. We have better weather, and it feels like everyone gains a boost of energy. However, for many, leaving winter behind doesn't always mean that their mood lightens up with the extra sunlight. We all carry around stress, and that stress can build as more events get added to your calendar.
That's certainly true, Donald. And with the amount of social gatherings increasing with the improving weather and more daylight, there's more pressure to be on when you're interacting with family, friends, coworkers, even strangers, even when stress has you a little bit down. And for some, getting advice from a therapist can help you tackle some of that stress without affecting you or the people you care about. That's what BetterHelp is all about. It's entirely online, and it's designed to be therapy that's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a professional, licensed therapist. And you can switch therapists anytime you want.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try and find your social sweet spot. Visit betterhelp.com/Duke Roundup today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Duke Roundup.
We're back from the break, and we want to talk very briefly about a story of a Dukie who is really, really succeeding at what he's at his chosen profession now that he's done with basketball. That is none other than J.J. Redick. It was announced this week that J.J. will be the lead announcer on the NBA final, or color guy, I guess I should say, not announcer, but part of the broadcast team, the head color guy for the NBA finals. That is a big deal assignment for JJ. You know, he's been in broadcasting now for a couple few years since retiring. He's doing very well. ESPN likes him a lot. And now he's getting like the plum role. Doc Rivers was doing it. They had Doc assigned to it, but then Doc got back into coaching. And so they've handed it off to JJ. I suspect if JJ wants, he's going to keep this gig for a long time because he is fabulous on TV.
Yeah, and first off, this is a huge promotion for him. I mean, he's been calling games. Usually it's alongside they usually have two analysts on the call for a lot of these games on ESPN. Yeah. And he's usually been alongside Richard Jeffs. So now he moves alongside Doris Burke, who's one of the best in the biz. And I think the best thing is no matter who he's paired with, he's able to complement those people, right? The play-by-play person, as well as whoever is also analyzing on the call. He's really good at just flowing with that and providing context to a situation that other people may not have because he has those, you know, that playing career. And I think him and Richard Jefferson play well off of that. But Jason, as you mentioned, he's everywhere at ESPN. He's on First Take. He's on, you know, Get Up. He's on NBA Today. He's on the pregame show. He's on the postgame show. You know, old man in the three. He's
still doing the podcast
out there. He's still doing his podcast. He's on every other podcast on ESPN. He's just become a super, you know, analyst. He's one of the best NBA analysts that ESPN has. And I think his attention to detail, the fact that it feels like he really loves doing this stuff and really, you know, bringing the perspective of a player who's, you know, just recently left the game, but also has the knowledge of some of these players out there. So I really, really am proud of him. I'm going from, you know, sports marketing class back at Duke University. Me and JJ were in the same class, and now this man's going to be calling the NBA Finals. He's done quite well for himself. So we're really proud of him. And this is a really big, big deal. As you mentioned, I think this is the start of him maybe remaining on that A broadcast for quite a long time.
Yeah, and I think this completes the Duke takeover of basketball broadcasting with JJ and his NBA role. Jay Billis, of course, is the top color analyst for NBA for the NCAA on ESPN. Jay Will is the top in-studio analyst for the NCAA on ESPN. Grant Hill does color on the Final Four, along with Jim Nantz and Bill Rafferty. They've been doing that together since 2015. Grant is a staple of that NCAA tournament. The absolute culmination of the season has a Dukie there. And now we get JJ with his NBA gig at the end of the NBA season. Duke does a really good job of, once guys' careers are done bouncing the basketball, they get to talk about and be in the business of basketball even after the playing career is over.
And Jason, one of the guys in the studio all year for CBS, Seth Davis, he didn't play at Duke, but he went to Duke.
Correct.
You also have Jim Spanarkle, who calls a ton of games for CBS during the
well, I wasn't going to get into all that. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. I'm you know, shout
G-Man?
Out Jefferson Pilot.
Yeah.
Shout out Jefferson Pilot and the G-Man, Mike Chiminski. Like, yo, we got Duke is everywhere. We are really everywhere. And it's great to see them thriving in these roles and bring in again that perspective that people can resonate with. It almost makes people go, wait, we make smart kids at Duke that not just play basketball, they know what they're talking about, because they're on TV all the time.
Exactly. All right, and with that, we'll wrap up this edition of DBR Bites. For Donald Wine, I am Jason Evans. We will be back with you after the Florida State game, taking a look ahead to the Miami game ACC standings. It is tight at the top. Blue Devils need to keep on winning now that they are on the road. For Donald, I'm Jason. Duke Band, play us out and take us home. So I wanted to tell you about, so I forgot to mention this on the Wake Forest recap. Steve Forbes in the post game press conference. First of all, he was incredibly like honest and straightforward. It was sort of weird because I knew I wasn't going to use any of his sound, but I kept on being like, oh wait, I want to record that. He was really great. But the funny thing was, so the press conference ends, and as he's walking out, there was a reporter there in the crowd who hadn't asked any questions, who clearly is one of the guys who covers Wake Forest all the time. And Forbes was like, you know, dude, don't you have any questions for me? And the guy was like, man, Steve, it'll be what it'll be. We just didn't have the shooting today. And Forbes goes, he goes, it's just like Bull Durham. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes it rains. Today it rained. I lost it. I was like, Steve Forbes pulling out one of the all-time great Bull Durham quotes. It was hysterical. That dude, you have to love him. He was, like I said, this press conference was just, it was so straightforward. There was no like sugarcoating anything. He's just like, yeah, we didn't shoot well. And, you know, here in camera,
we have some coaches that are quite engaging when you actually listen to their press conferences. Like, yeah. I talked about last year when we were in Notre Dame and Mike Bray just basically talked for 30 minutes and they were just like, oh, like John's ready to come in. He's like, oh yeah, right. Yeah. You guys have other people you need to talk to. But like every single time Mike Bray was on, like, again, even Leonard Hamilton has some quotes where you're just like, oh, Leonard's been saving that one for a rainy day. He's ready. we got some characters.
Did you see the Larrañaga press conference the other day where he like,
no, mm-mm.
You didn't see this?
Mm-mm.
Oh my God. So it was after they
Which game was this after? Was this after Virginia?
It was after the Virginia game where they lost by like 30 to, you know, yeah, they scored
60 to 38. Mm-hmm.
And he comes in and he basically was like, any questions? And people were kind of quiet for a couple of minutes and he goes, all right, I'm done. And just leaves. I was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
It was very funny. He was having none of it. He looks miserable on the bench this year.
Oh yeah. Like I said, the team, we'll talk about it next week, but like this team is playing very much unlike a Coach L team. They're just not up for business. And especially, you know, the one guy that they got this year was Matthew Cleveland, who's killed us in the past when he was at Florida State.
Yeah.
And him going from Florida State to Miami was a huge deal in both circles. And then like has been fairly non-existent for most of the season. So yeah.
That dude was supposed to be one and done. When he went to Florida State, everyone was saying he was going to be one and done.
Yeah, and still we have to deal with him. Now we have to deal with him in another team. Like, why? just graduate. Be happy.